Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have a lot of great talent in this room. So let me go around and introduce everybody, and we'll get started with the topics for today. We'll of course begin in France. We welcome your thoughts, your questions, your concerns, your rants.
Your raves.
Your raves, sure. Your ravings. Yes, all of that. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning.
Good morning, Joe. I'm taking after you. Roselle and I were in the city this weekend, and we went to see... Did I do something wrong?
No, I was
checking. And we went to see two Broadway plays, which were great, Bandstand and also Cagney. And if anybody hasn't seen Cagney, it's only on for about a month. It's wonderful.
That's
never
great.
Saw tap dancing like that in my life. Okay, I'm
really?
Done.
Now, the guy, Bandstand, is written by a man right here from Albany, which is very exciting.
So it's Schenectady.
But is it Schenectady?
Oh, yeah,
I believe. And here's what's so great about it. I lost something in the theater, and he found it. This guy. He's just standing right behind me.
Did you lose your rhythm at the theater and he found it for you? Is that it?
It was my, case for my ear thing.
Oh, your devices.
Yeah, my devices.
Are you hearing aids?
And he came up with it and he said, he looked at me and said, wait a minute, you're Dr. Alan Chartok. And he said, I can't believe it. I had a show on WAMC. And I said, do you have anything to do with this play? He said, yeah, I wrote it. And
wow.
Boy, it's quite a play.
And what's his name?
Joe will remember.
Yes, not only will I tell you his name, but I will tell you this very cool news, which is that tomorrow he will be on our program.
Ooh,
talking
cool.
To
Sarah LaDuke.
The wonderful Sarah LaDuke. That's right. So we are very excited by that. And I'm just bringing up my full notes here. But Robert Taylor is a man's name, co-book writer and lyricist for the brand new musical Bandstand, which opens on Broadway on Wednesday night.
And we saw it in a preview. It was great.
And what's it about?
It was about veterans who come home after World War II, a period piece.
Oh.
And they form a band. And the band actually plays on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
They're all very good actors and they're all great players. And it's a cast of thousands. It's terrific.
Yeah.
Great.
Really? Corey Cotson, that's
great.
Really good stuff. Okay. Good morning, Alan. Rosemary Hermel is here. She is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I spent the weekend protesting. That's how I get my aerobic exercise now, is marching in protest. And next week, down to this Capitol where we were marching in support of science. They had the best, funniest, smartest signs ever, almost better, I would say, than the Women's March. And this week coming up, it's a march in favor of continued research and action on climate change. So I'm going to march across the bridge, across the Hudson, down your way, Malcolm, and Tipsy. Yeah, they have a big, big demonstration going on.
Excellent. So you were busy, and you said a lot of kids were there, too, which is very cool.
Tons of kids, which is really heartening, which makes them involved both in science, I hope, and in a political engagement.
Counterterrorism expert and MSNBC correspondent, commentator, is that what they call you, commentator?
Yeah, contributor.
Contributor, there
analyst.
You go, contributor, oh, analyst, and our good friend.
They don't say no at all, do they? But they could, and not in a bad way.
Lots of people say that.
Malcolm Nance is with us, and we're thrilled that Malcolm could be with us. And so good morning. Thank
morning.
You. Libby Post is here. Good morning, Libby. How
good
are
morning.
You?
Good morning. I'm okay.
Libby joins us most Mondays, almost every Monday, and we're thrilled because it's Monday, and Libby's here.
As long as I'm healthy.
Here you are.
I'm here.
Excellent.
If you have your health, you have,
you have everything.
Everything.
Right.
All right. Well, welcome all. Thank you very much.
Kanahara.
I was going to say, what was that in the original Hebrew?
Kanahara. Right.
Let's talk about the vote in France that took place yesterday. Emmanuel Macron and Marine Le Pen will advance in the French elections. As we have been talking about for several days and weeks, this election was being closely watched. And as we also know, there are two parts to this election. And so the first being yesterday on the 23rd, Yes, 23rd. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then the May 7th runoff takes place. That's the next step. Now, it is a, when you look at what happened, there were, I believe, 13 candidates. We're now down to two, Emmanuel Macron and Marine Le Pen. They will go to a runoff to determine the next president. One is a political novice, the other a far-right firebrand, both outsiders, but with starkly different visions for the country. The result was a full-throated rebuke of France's traditional Main Street parties, setting the country on an uncertain path in an election that could also decide the future of the European Union. I will say that from my understanding, all but one of the candidates has now thrown their support behind behind Macron.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one who has not just hasn't announced it yet. So we don't know where we're going yet.
Well, far be it for me to start it off. But especially when we have all these other wonderful people here. But it does seem to me that there can be some overconfidence. I was listening to BBC very early this morning and to others, and they were saying, well, this would easily be, you know, Macron's to take, he should win by 20 points. I hear stuff like that. And yet, I think the idea of the French people embracing both Macron and the fascist. Oh, did I say that? Le Pen. It seems to me that, like with the Trump situation, there are a lot of people who want to blow up the system, and that may really be what this is all about. And the other last thing I'm going to say is, if we've learned one thing, even though the pollsters had it exactly right in this particular election, don't trust the pollsters, because people who are on that right side of things don't really like to tell what they're thinking.
Look, Le Pen has already won. It doesn't matter the runoff, because he is, Macron, should he win, is not going to have a parliamentary majority, which means she has outsized influence over what happens. He's already pulling away from some of his positions closer towards hers. It's just bad news, however you look at it.
Well, I think some of the positions that Le Pen has that are proving popular, that make her this populist candidate, Macron could easily, you know, take. I mean, in the same way that Trump took a lot of Bernie Sanders' strengths away from him, you know, and used them against Hillary Clinton.
Yep.
Macron could do the same thing. Some of the things that she's calling for aren't particularly un-French. I mean, I spent reams of time in France working with the French government. And let me tell you, at calling on France to return to Frenchness, right? I mean, that's what the entire tourism industry there is based on, right? But he can still make the multicultural call that France is and always was, you know, vive la différence, right? They have this basis of being a world center, and that they don't have to give that up in order to return to its Frenchness. But what Marine Le Pen is a very dangerous character in that respect. And we are in a sort of Trump moment for France, but it's not just for France. It's France and the world.
Yeah.
If she, first off, very clearly, as you guys know, I wrote a book called Plot to Hack America, and my sequel is The Plot to Destroy Democracy. And she is Vladimir Putin's paid candidate. She has taken over 40 million euros, 20 million in the last election and 21 in this election, from the Kremlin direct. All right? So if Macron jumps onto that she is part of the destruction of Europe, which is Putin's strategy over there, which is to create these autocracies, this axis of autocracy, with the United States in one side and France in the middle, I think they'll reject it, and I think they'll reject it hard.
So let me ask you a question there, Malcolm. We had a terrible series of bombings around the world in France and others, and there was an expectation that might help her in this election, but apparently not.
Well, look, I mean, I went to France after Bataclan, right? Yeah. The attacks inside of Paris. I did a full analysis of those attacks. I went to Brussels and worked with the Belgian government. And the one thing that I found and that I didn't have to worry about is the French, unlike the Americans, are extremely resilient. their population is small. I mean, it's 88 million people compared to the United States. In a geographically tight area, the size of the Northeast United States. But, you know, they do not allow, like the British's stiff upper lip, they don't allow Bataclan to take away from them. When these people sing La Marseillaise, they mean it, right? Or they get together and they form the battalions and march on after whatever the adversity is. And I saw more sharing and closeness with the, you know, the pretty badly maligned French Muslim community, who are just French that are Muslims, after that than I've seen any time. I mean, you know, people didn't like to go to Marseille because, you know, everyone was Muslim down there. Well, Marseille had one of the biggest rallies in France. I don't think this Islamophobia thing is going to play very well. But you also have to understand the Russians are making their pitch there, just as they tried in the Netherlands. There are thousands of bots that were assigned to the Trump campaign, and this is verifiable by numerous security companies. These computer program bots, which were coming out of Eastern Europe, that shifted from, you know, pushing propaganda for the Trump campaign, that are now pushing it for Le Pen.
So it's naive to think that they aren't working, that the Russians and Putin are not working as hard for Le Pen as they were for Trump.
Naive. I mean, this is now a intelligence community standard. This is a norm. We now believe the Russians have a strategic plan. That strategic plan is they are realigning the West. And that realignment requires them to create autocracies like Putin's autocracy in Russia. They made a shot for Germany. They made a shot towards the Netherlands. We're finding out now with a study from the British government, the Brexit had a electronic warfare operation against it, which was run by thousands of these bots, these electronic computer programs, which were spewing out pro-Brexit propaganda, and that it may have actually influenced the entire Brexit vote. And then we have the election of Donald Trump, which now may actually go from suspicious to criminal, considering that some people
are... Do you think there's really a shot?
I have to say this all the time. Yes. The investigation, for everyone who is listening to the sound of my voice, the investigation that is being carried out by the FBI is not a normal investigation. It is a counterintelligence investigation. They are investigating these individuals as assets of a foreign intelligence agency. Okay? Not just criminal Enrico. The people that are doing this are the spy hunters of the United States.
Well, but I trust that you read the wonderful article in the New York Times on Comey this weekend, in which basically his motives were called into question here. I mean, there are many of us who think he won the election for Trump because it was that close. But you really trust Comey and his FBI to do this thing?
That's the thing. And, you know, I saw another article where the Senate investigation is woefully understaffed and nobody's full-time.
No professionals.
And so, you know, you have to wonder, yes, on one hand, you want to think that the FBI is going to do the right thing and have this really done well. But then you've got Comey, who pretty much at the bidding of D'Amato and some other folks did what he did in the last week of the campaign with that letter.
I think in Comey's head, just because the FBI really is two different worlds, there's the gumshoe FBI, and then there's the national counterintelligence guys. And I think Comey saw the stuff with Clinton as just political stuff that he had to address because it was Congress. But he will never open his mouth about a counterintelligence investigation. That is the most serious type of investigation that you can do in the United States, hunting an American who may be a spy.
But he didn't realize that he was going to win the election.
Right.
I don't know. I'm not in the man's head.
That was disgusting.
I know if he had opened his mouth about Donald Trump campaign and Russian spies, that would have changed the election.
So why didn't that happen?
Because I think he has the mindset that FBI counterintelligence investigations are gold. They will never be discussed ever, ever, ever. Whereas politics is something that he obviously can open his mouth about.
Well, Malcolm, you know that I'm a great
admirer.
It's
not positive.
You know that I'm a great admirer of yours, but I do not agree with this.
Okay, Roger.
I truly believe that Comey has been a bad actor here.
Yes, he's been politicized. criticized.
And that when you mention the motto, when we mention that, that's the kind of stuff that really does reek. And look at the nightmare we're in as a result of mm-hmm. what he did.
Yeah, and yeah. I just want to make one other point about Le Pen. I was in France for the attacks. I was in Paris for the attacks. And, you know, the next...
like, oh, I hear there's going to be
attacks.
Let's
so
get
let's
from
go. Like, I was like, I don't want to leave...
town for the Olympics and the attacks.
I don't want to leave the country, honey. And then we went. And then, you know, so... But we left the next day. And there was a sense of resiliency in this. And, you know, people were going around, going about their business as they should. But, you know... If Le Pen becomes the president of France, I think we are going to see open
Holy
season
cow.
On the Jewish community like Oof. We haven't yet seen. And it's no piece of cake to be a Jew in Paris these days.
It won't be coming from the Muslims.
Oh, no. I'm not saying it will come from the Muslims.
No, I'm saying you're
the
right.
Muslims and the Jews are really starting to work together in these kinds of situations to fight back against the hate. But, well, you know, she's a Nazi and she comes out of that playbook.
I mean, there's a whole village in France, the name escapes me right now, where they kept it whole, where the Nazis came in and killed everybody hunting for Jews. And they have left this as a national memorial with every building destroyed exactly as it was done there, as a reminder of the hundreds of thousands of Jews that were shoveled out of France and sent to the ovens. And let me tell you, I think you will have a national split. Mm-hmm. To where this isn't even De Gaullist French, right? This is, you know, De Gaulle took France out of NATO and France for France. But it was still a liberal democracy which advanced and wanted progress and wanted to be the heart of Europe, as opposed to let's destroy Europe, because that's what will happen. They pull out of the euro. France goes back to the 1950s. Europe goes back to the 1950s. The entire global market that we are now a part of, whether people believe in globalization or not, will smash a component of our economy. And these people don't seem to care. A lot of these people are a wrecking crew.
Let's pause there. We will take a break. We'll continue. As you may have noticed, our panelists have opinions, and they want to share more of them with you, and they will do so in just a moment. We welcome your opinions as well. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel for this Monday, the 24th of April. Very nice to have you with us. We have a couple letters, and then we'll move on to other subjects like North Korea. So let us go to those. And then we'll move on.
Okay, we've heard of Rich from Germantown, who says, investigation? Malcolm, comforting words. Hope it works out in favor of democracy.
Yeah, democracy is at risk here.
Jennifer says, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey.
Just want to mention that our group of middle-aged friends, mostly women in the Hudson area, have been inspired by Malcolm to follow the Russia-Trump collusion situation like crazed, obsessed people. Please do a live talk in Hudson, Malcolm. Where's your own show on MSNBC? Please run for office. Sign your big fans in Chatham, New York.
You have groupies.
I have groupies. My wife finds that so amusing. But I would like to talk in Hudson. The Hudson Opera House just had their gala this weekend. I missed it.
You just did something which I am very glad you did.
What's that?
You used the wrong word for the Hudson Opera House.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hudson House.
Yes, or Hudson House or something
Hudson
like that.
Hudson House.
Hudson Hall, right?
Hudson Hall. You don't want to do that. They may. I love them. We've supported them. But it's a big mistake.
Oh,
it's always been the Hudson Opera House, and it always should be the Hudson Opera House.
By God, like I'll only speak at the Hudson Opera House.
Well, didn't they? So I thought they decided on it being the Hudson Hall at the historic Hudson Opera House. Isn't that what they agreed on?
I don't know.
That's like SUNY Albany becoming UAlbany. Yeah, that'll go over easy.
They got a lot of negative comment on that change, so maybe they pulled back a little bit.
But they've gotten that ceiling fixed in the hall, so it must be awesome.
Well, it took a long time.
Yeah.
150 years.
Shall we?
Continue.
Alan,
what?
Next letter.
Oh, please.
What, do you got a bus? What do you got?
Yeah, I got to go to Buffalo. I got to go to Buffalo. What do you want to mean?
And here I go into my French, from my French class with Madame Beerbaum. Over to Hunter College. Okay. Orador sur Glane. Anybody want to correct me?
Say that again.
O-R-A-D-O-U-R hyphen. Sir hyphen Glean.
Oh, Adur-sur-Glean.
You see? Yeah.
That's the name
of
the
like
village.
What he said.
Is the preserved village that That's Malcolm village. Was referring to. It's near Limoges.
Yes.
Okay.
Merci beaucoup.
And why, says Martin McGinnis, who is always writing to us in good stuff, why should we trust the FBI investigation in Comey? The double standard he employed in regards to Clinton and Trump was deplorable. Regardless of the secret nature of counterintelligence investigations, he took it upon himself to publicly demonize HRC in regards to emails which never threatened anyone. How is it okay to do that and simultaneously keep it secret that the man who might be president is a stooge of the Russians? He has no, capital N-O, credibility in any investigation, Marty.
All right.
I'm afraid I have to disagree with Dr. Shartok on this issue, says Oleg, as he's mostly on the money. I see the ascension of centrist Macron as not about blowing up the system, but rather to disgust the electorate with professional politicians who continuously game the system and are 100% occupied with winning elections rather than governing for the people who put them there. Maybe the French can show the world how to reject establishment without throwing out the baby in bathwater.
Oh, baloney. He's as inexperienced as Trump, and that has translated into incompetence here. You can't change governance if you don't know how to govern.
Mm-hmm. But
it's crazy, crazy thinking.
But we do not really disagree, Oleg. We don't really disagree, because the fact is, when I say blow up the system, they are disgusted with the same old, and that's what they're saying. They don't get their fair share.
When you know stuff, you do it a certain way. We're seeing that with Trump right now, who is not going to blow up the Fed. He's not going to declare China a monetary monster. When you know stuff, you do it one way. That is what there is value in having an establishment. We seem to have forgotten that in our frustration and anger, and it will cost us.
Yeah, that establishment, who's that guy who made it up? Washington?
Yeah.
Somebody Jeffersonian? Democracy, which people see.
He was the president who
destroy.
Believed in honesty, mm-hmm. by the way. Remember that? Remember those days?
Well, mm-hmm. you know, he's a president that saw the greater good of the nation above his own personal good. And mm-hmm. Those are values we've lost. And hopefully for France, they will go back to, they can have their De Gaullist world, but they don't have to destroy, you know, égalité, fraternity, and liberty to do it.
Who could ever forget the middle of Casablanca? Oh.
Alors la France et la patrie.
Or shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
No.
Oh, yeah.
That was when they start to sing a song.
That was the best line.
Let us go to Beijing and talk about North Korea. President Xi Jinping called for restraint when dealing with North Korea during a telephone call with President Donald Trump, according to Chinese state media. The official broadcaster CCTV quoted Xi as telling Trump that China strongly opposed North Korea's nuclear weapons program, which are in violation of UN Security Council resolutions, and hoped, quote, all parties will exercise restraint and avoid aggravating the situation. So if I have this right, Malcolm, China called President Trump and said, hey, calm down.
That's all it takes. Huh?
China is adult in the room. Well, this is a very serious situation, so the jokes are about to stop. You know, North Korea has been preparing since 1953 for the Second Korean War. That's, I believe, 64 years. They have been digging into tunnels. They have been putting into position weapons that are antiquated enough that our technology cannot stop them when they start. They have a million-man standing army, and they have the will and the willpower and the insanity to bring it on their terms as soon as they think they have a functioning, workable, deployable atomic weapon.
And what about the relationship with China? Can China tell them what to do, which is an assumption on a lot of people's parts?
Nope. China can cut off their food supplies, which could provoke a war. China could try to influence them by, you know, they've actually tightened up on the borders. They deployed air defense units this last week to sort of give them the message that we won't allow anything. You know, there's not going to be any of this, our assistance for you if you get into trouble. Kim Jong-un just wants respect. The problem is the kind of respect that he wants as part of the North Korean political strategy is that it must take place in a time of provocation. Provocation is a critical component of how they do foreign policy.
So what are you saying?
Which is why they just arrested an American. the other day as a form of Professor what we call, Kim. That's the lowest grade of provocation, hostile government detention, where they seize an American citizen and use him as leverage to try to get you to come and talk to them. But until that atomic bomb is miniaturized and working on an intercontinental ballistic missile system where they will continue the provocation.
But that is inevitable, right?
That is inevitable. There is no stopping that train. And the only way to stop it is to burn it out with
a nuke. So if, I wish it were so, you were president, what would you do? How would you handle this provocation?
Well, you know, I cut my bones in the Middle East. And if there's anything that I've learned is when you go into the camel souk, right, and you need to buy a camel, you got to act like the locals. You got to negotiate like the locals. North Korea, since the Korean War, three generations of the Kims, right, have been trying to press this image for their survival through the threat of force. And you have to give them an alternative. And the only alternative is to give them the ability to understand that they could be like China. They could be a first world nation, but they want respect at the point of an atomic bomb. And unfortunately, we're now about to give them a reason to accelerate their program.
By the way, can I just ask a question? What the hell was an American doing in Korea again?
He's a Korean citizen, too, and he was teaching. He had been at a Chinese institution and then moved over.
That's what they say.
Every time a politician runs for president, they're always talking about more and more assets on the ground. And an asset means more spies. So I don't want to go, I don't want to go to New Orleans, let alone go to Korea. You know what I mean?
New Orleans is awesome.
I know,
Korea is a communistic dictatorship. So, but this isn't the sort of place where we would do that. I mean, that's up to the South Koreans. They have people who have relationships, know how to run agents in there, things like that. But the North Koreans, hostile government detention, which is a technical term for when a foreign government needs leverage against another one, they will seize a citizen, a promising citizen, or any citizen of that nation, and hold them as a political detainee in order to get that.
Well, if you know that, why didn't he know that?
Who is that? Who's he?
The guy they took.
Oh, well, you know, that's the point, is you seize any random citizen. You won't see me going to Russia anytime soon. So this is just one of the things the White House should have known. This is ground-level provocation. They want to see what the Trump administration would do. Obama administration, mm-hmm. this happened. They sent in, in negotiators. I think Bill Clinton actually took part in some negotiations. Yeah. But that gave them the feeling that they could speak on a state-to-state basis as opposed to declaring that they're not really a state and that we're going to use force to resolve their atomic weapons program. that's provocation. That's literally going into the bear's den.
So
and,
to what degree will the American people follow, the Trump lead on being tough with these people? In other words, up until now, when American presidents have said, jingoism and the rest of it, the American people buy it. You think that's not going to happen here?
I don't know. I mean, Lester Holt was there just recently. He did brilliant reporting from the demilitarized zone and explained very clearly what the U.S. military presence is there and how U.S. forces would be deeply involved in a bitter struggle that would immediately, instantly, in a matter of minutes, the North Koreans could rain 14,000 rounds of artillery mixed with high explosives, VX nerve gas, and sarin nerve gas into the middle of the city of Seoul, South Korea. That has 10 million people there and 40 million people in the Evrons.
But wouldn't that be a sure destruction for them?
Sure destruction for whom?
For the North Koreans.
How? You would have to, we would have to reinstate the draft. That is a... Unless you use atomic bombs?
Yes, nukes and things like that, yeah.
Well, that's a decision that we shouldn't even be discussing now, is it? We shouldn't go from verbal provocations to what could possibly be, when you blow up an atomic bomb, you're eating that in your food in 72 hours.
But I'm not talking about the provocation itself. Hmm. I'm talking about if they put that nerve gas into the middle of Seoul.
Sure, but what would be the provocation that would make them put that nerve gas into the middle of Seoul? The belief that the United States is going to attack their country with atomic bombs. And they're talking like that.
We've said it. We have all alternatives on the table. That's the vice president.
I don't think we've ever gotten to this escalation in this amount of time. North Korea has shot down airplanes with U.S. airmen in it, captured ships with U.S. intelligence collectors in it. We've gotten to the point where we've wanted to retaliate against them, but now they're on the cusp of an atomic bomb and an ICBM to carry it that would put everything west of Denver in their sights, and provocation is not what's needed at this point.
You have an unpopular president desperate to raise his numbers, mm-hmm. and he's found that if he's aggressive and drops bombs,
right.
he gets more numbers.
No. This is, okay, this is in a neighborhood where we should not be talking like it's a possibility. Atomic bomb usage for the first time since World War II should be, unless there is some extraordinary situation like they attempt to attack Seattle, right, mm-hmm. and we shoot the device down, where we shouldn't be talking about that. I mean, we should be talking about maximum diplomatic efforts.
But we're not. We're not, Malcolm.
Right, and the problem is there's no State Department. Really?
Oh, yeah.
You know, based on
small problem.
When you were around, there's no State Department.
That was three months ago.
Right, but you got Matt, right, but you got Tillerson.
Those days.
Right, those are the good old days where diplomacy meant something. Right now, you've got Tillerson who doesn't really know what he's doing.
He does. He just isn't interested in Korea.
I don't know if he really understands diplomacy. He understands business and making a deal. You've got a State Department that's been decimated. How are we going to deal with this diplomatically? That's the problem. We have a president who doesn't care about diplomacy. He doesn't think it's worthwhile.
I'm going to hold you there. Let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the Palace Theater, Albany, presenting Brian Wilson in concert performing Pet Sounds in its entirety, along with music from his career, April 26th, palacealbany.org, for tickets. Utica College, working to help solve the college affordability issue with its tuition reset initiative, utica.edu/affordable. Viva Fresh Pasta, 30 years and 30 wines by the glass. European cuisine infused with flavors of the world. Northampton, Massachusetts. Grab life by the knife and fork. VivaFreshPasta.com. Dr. Brian Strickler at Schenectady Eye Surgery Associates, offering comprehensive eye care, including advanced technology cataract surgery. SchenectadyEyeSurgery.com. And from Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years, KentHicksConstruction.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Shartok, Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, and Malcolm Nance is with us this morning. We welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And just a quick reminder, please keep your letters short, keep them to the point, don't include links or threats. And
have we gotten any threats or just links?
Not today. No, not today. All right, not yet. Okay, so let us move on. Are we all ready to move on from?
Well,
sure.
Go ahead. Did you have another?
Just one last question for Malcolm.
Okay. Yes.
Malcolm.
Yeah.
The president of China, the president of China doesn't usually get on a phone and call a guy a couple of times this way. He has. Now, you said something earlier, which is that China is now the adult in the room. Mm. But are they worried? What are they worried about, really worried about?
You know, all this time, remember when we were seeing China as this sort of economic competitor and China as, you know, big China breaking out as a sort of capitalist nation and not negotiating and doing things with the United States? And you look at it in the framework of what we have now, what Libby was saying, there is no State Department. They're not one of the deputy secretaries. There is no deputy secretary of the Far East. Mm-hmm. There is no U.S. ambassador to South Korea, no U.S. ambassador to Japan. I think, did they appoint one to China? I don't think so yet. The point is,
John Huntsman.
Yeah,
Huntsman's
exactly.
Going back. Okay, so the Chinese have decided they will step into the power vacuum of the United States and be the adult to ensure that there is not a pan-Asian war that includes atomic weapons. And that is an amazing statement for me to make, you know, because it means the United States has abdicated complete responsibility for its former role as global diplomat and the stability agent of the world. That's not positive.
All right.
I need to go home and get under the covers, like right now.
Can I make a quick statement?
Sure, you're going to go to...
Sure.
Yesterday was Yom HaShoah in Israel, the Day of Remembrance for the Holocaust.
And
today. And I just think that the Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum in Tel Aviv, in Jerusalem, where I've been a couple of times, did a great thing where they had 6 Holocaust survivors. And you should go online and take a look at those speeches of these survivors. And it's just one of the things that has sort of been lacking recently is these remembrances that the White House would normally do, that WAMC will do for you.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is this, just like we're losing all the World War II vets, we're also losing Holocaust survivors. There's not that many still alive. And so it's important for things like Steven Spielberg's Shoah Project those things to be remembered. And it's important for us to remember what happened and to never forget. I mean, we lit our Yom HaShoah candle last night. At my synagogue, we do this reading of all the French Jewish kids who died during the Holocaust. It's a 24-hour reading. It's incredibly powerful. And, you know, with what's going on in France, you couple that with Putin and you couple that with Trump. Anybody who's not white, Christian, and male is in trouble. It's just that simple. And straight. Because look at Chechnya.
Yeah, they're murdering. Making ISIS look lame.
That's right.
All right. Let us, we just have about 5 minutes before we go over to a break. So I want to talk, how worried should we be about the Russian planes that we are seeing
over Alaska?
That we are detecting off of Alaska, about a half dozen of them in the last week.
Not worried. I mean, these things have been going on since the 40s. And these planes they're using, the Tu-95 Bears, these are like propeller-driven. They're older than the B-52.
Is that how Palin saw Russia from her house?
Probably.
She probably saw saw an Alaskan airline flight and said, the Russians. No, this is normal. Nothing to worry about.
All right, that's interesting because the stories, if you read them, say that. They all say just what Malcolm did. So why are we reading about it now if it's been going on since the 40s? Is this from the media? Is it from the administration trying to hype up worry?
It's slowed down a bit. And, you know, Russia almost started the Partnership for Peace in the late 1980s, which is the precursor to joining NATO. That's been when Russia was sort of a corrupt democracy. Now it is an autocracy. It is essentially a mafia-run dictatorship. And they are stretching. They're poor. They're very poor in Russia and with a horrible economy. But what they do have is weapons. And they've decided they're going to go back to Warsaw Pact versus NATO level of activity just to spook the Americans. And it's working in the media. But these planes, good God, we should be following them because we may have to do a rescue when the rivets come out of the wings and they fall out of the sky.
Well, if I may, that's a contradiction, Malcolm, with what you said about Korea, which has so much old material, old war material, that our technology can't quite deal with it. So it's true for the Koreans, but not for the Russians.
What's that? Yeah, well, the Russians. This is a completely different animal. I mean, they've got high technology weapons, and they, you know, but again, they're poor and they have no reason to go to war with the United States, which is why they choose cyber warfare systems. Korea, that reminds me of that line from Apocalypse Now, you know, how do you defeat somebody that fights a jet airplane with bows and arrows? Korea will just sit there and use those ancient weapons and walk through, and millions will die, or hundreds of thousands will die. So
we don't have to be worried about that.
No, don't be worried about that.
All right, we have other things to worry about. We have other things to worry about, so we'll worry about that.
We have one letter I'd like to read, if I may, very quickly.
Yes, 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 yes.
French diction, dear roundtable, not a rebuke or snobbish, but an appeal. Please take the time to learn and practice correct pronunciation of foreign language names, places, etc., if they will figure prominently in the air on discussion. Witness this morning's incorrect pronunciation by several of the panel on Emmanuel Macron's surname.
Sorry.
That's
sorry.
From Catherine.
I only took three years of French.
My French Canadian wife is calling right now. But that's Quebecois.
I know Madame Beerbaum would not be happy with me.
I still can't say Reince Priebus's name. Forget the French leaders.
You didn't
Why
roll
would you
the
want
R.
to?
Yeah, the whole Reince. Rolling R thing like really hurt me in all language classes I've ever taken.
There are way too many people with too little time on their hands. So thank you.
Thank you. We love your letters.
Keep them coming.
Appreciate your input.
Okay, time to go take a break.
All right. No, not yet. We have a minute.
Oh, my God.
A minute?
What are
today?
You? What
huh?
are you?
Yeah, you were like the moderator
see, you
today.
You know, somebody's over there, Ray's over there, and he's like waiting to read the news.
So. She literally has to shuffle off the buffalo.
Right, it's true, and I am shuffling since
okay,
I have a boot on.
Okay, but you get out at 10:25.
Okay, fine.
That's
not changing.
Yeah, I know. It's not, honey. I know.
Read the contract.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so neither is our rate of pay. So thank you very much.
We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our battle discussion for this Monday morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Malcolm Nance, and Libby Post make up the group this morning. They're spirited. They're fired up. They're ready to go. We have some letters. We'll go to those, and then we'll move on to some other topics.
You do?
Sound good?
Whatever.
Okay.
Dominic, glad you were at the march to Rosemary for Science in Albany Saturday. Question, as a journalism professor, why does the TU continue to downplay the number of people at these local marches? They reported, quote, hundreds when city officials reported at least 3,000 and other people reported 5,000 to 6,000. I was there. A lot more than hundreds were there. And that's from Dominic.
You know, the TU took a knock. It was all over Facebook that they hadn't covered it at all, when in fact there is a huge picture, at least in the print editions that they could get it into, I guess, on the front of the local section, and a whole story. And they also had photographs and coverage of the science march the week before. If you're there, of course you want it to be 8,000. I would have. I was there, and I am a supporter. I would say 3,000 to 5,000 is not wrong. But hundreds is three to 5,000 encompasses hundreds, and the picture showed that. And I think they're trying to be careful and truthful, which is a good thing in the media.
Well, everybody gets slammed for trying to estimate population. The National Park Service doesn't do it anymore.
Yeah, because of Trump.
It goes way back before then. But for some of the other,
you're never going to win on that.
No, you're not. Unless
but
you do
I was there. I thought the TU coverage was just fine. I thought the event was amazing. And it's Trump's attention we have to get.
Mm-hmm. Richard says this is to the panel on the question of diplomacy. The lack of it is a problem with Trump, and he is a liar.
Okay.
All right. So it's a statement.
So what's the question?
I think it's a statement. It's a statement.
Yeah. Tell us something we can debate.
If reporters blared it on the headlines, Trump's plan will end up in reinstating the draft, forget about jobs in college, your kids are going to war. That would be real. People might listen, and his popularity would tank. Allison,
It is not all up to the media. If the citizens put him in there, not the media, which was almost uniformly against him. It's the citizens who did this. You're the ones who have to act.
Oh, we have a war economy, and we haven't had a war in a long time.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's Terry Branstad who got appointed, or is the nominee for China.
Oh.
Not John Huntsman. John Huntsman's
going to
Russia. I apologize profusely.
Okay. Linda says, can any of you explain the actual process that goes into the decision to launch a missile or a bomb? Is there anyone who acts as a check on the president's whim? There must be other people who have to agree before he gets to blow things up. And that's from Linda.
Well, I have some bad news for you.
Yeah.
During my career, I did have to do a short temporary stint at a National Nuclear Command post, which is underground. And they give you a briefing on the process when you come in.
Really?
There was a lot of writing on it last year. John Capehart wrote a great op-ed about it. But what happens is this. The president of the United States is the ultimate and only command authority on the use of atomic weapons.
Charming.
Only. And what he does, if he determines that there is a imminent threat to the United States, you know, in any scenario other than, you know, 3,000 atomic bombs coming over the horizon from Russia that have been verified, he can request an options package be presented to him, which is in the presidential football, that briefcase that's carried there. And if he determines that there is a reason for the United States to use the ultimate military force, which is a nuclear attack, he will be given options on the basis of where the target is. He will be given levels of attack, which can be from one single bomb dropped by a tactical fighter, or cruise missile, or a full launch from a military base in Kansas, you know, using Minuteman III's or other missiles. And their only requirement is the Secretary of Defense must verify that that is the President of the United States giving the order. And at that point, there is nothing that will stop it.
Do you think we have enough generals to say no?
No, it doesn't matter whether they want to say
no or
not.
Well, you have the Secretary of Defense being a general.
Well, it doesn't matter. Secretary of Defense's only obligation is to verify whether he is the person. And he has biometric identifications, too, but it's up to the Secretary of Defense. He can relieve the Secretary of Defense and go to the Deputy Secretary of Defense, make him Secretary of Defense, and have him verify that it is him. But, you know, there was a joke around the NMMC that we were at, and that was, well, how do you stop him if he goes crazy? And the joke was, tackle him. But that is an illegal, unless it is a patently illegal order. A patently illegal order is nuke Paris, for example, right? Just patently illegal order. Every member of the armed forces has a right after the My Lai massacres in Vietnam. You have a right to disobey an unlawful order. That's written into the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So we will have to see. But the system is not designed for dissent. It's not designed for authorization.
But what makes nuke Paris illegal and nuke Asia and set off a pan-Asian nuclear holocaust legal? What's the difference?
Well, I think it's a political and moral difference that you would have to determine at the time. I mean, if North Korea were to, you know, detonate a bomb, let's say, in the Sea of Japan, and or a small island off of northern Japan. Well, that, by the way, the electromagnetic pulse from that would drop every airplane between Seoul and Tokyo, which would kill about 30,000-40,000 people. But you would have to, you know, proportionality has been everything that this nation has built its defense on. And I believe that there is a secret presidential pass-down log, and it says three things in it. Don't start a land war in Asia, don't tank the economy, and don't ever touch nuclear weapons. And we know that at least one president has done two out of three of those things. But now, no president should go there unless they really want know that they're putting radiological materials into the air for all of us.
It's the end of the world.
Well, it depends on how many weapons are used to be the end of the world. But if you're talking one or two, well, you certainly will have everyone divest from the United States the next day. So total economic collapse.
I really need to go home under the covers.
So no. So again, let's not push these discussions there. But as long as we're here, Nikki Haley just made a statement a few minutes ago saying, I'll give you the quote. We have said from the beginning, and what I'll continue to say, is the United States is not looking for a fight. So don't give us a reason to have one. The second half of that statement is provocative.
So let me ask you, Malcolm, do you think that Donald Trump has the capacity to get us into a nuclear war?
I think every president has the capacity to get us into a nuclear war.
No, capacity is a bad word. Do you think he will get us into a nuclear war?
Well, I can't make that projection. Because I have to see the levels of escalation and the steps of escalation. And once it goes out of the norms, because right now it's just saber rattling and cheap smack talk. And so the North Koreans are sort of laughing since our aircraft carrier was 3,500 miles away from where we said it was. So they're not taking a lot of these things seriously. And they understand their saber rattling really means something. But we'll have to see.
All right. Brittany says, Your topics, it's about Malcolm. Your topics are always more compelling with Mr. Nance as a guest. Invite him anytime. You're welcome. It's actually signed from Woody. You're welcome, Woody. We certainly have, and we will certainly continue to. He's great. Get the part about you're welcome.
Thanks.
All right, let's move on to some other topics and see what else we can talk about here. Who wants to? Let's see.
Me.
I want to find it. What?
I know.
Okay. I understand.
See?
So we have 10 minutes. So I want to go on to we're approaching 100 days. Trump's poll numbers are at about anywhere from 39% to 41%, and the headline out of all of this: approval at record lows, but his base is holding.
It's unbelievable to me. Well, maybe it isn't, because it's only 100 days. We make a big deal about it, and other people say, give him a chance, give him a year or so. But I'll go back to a Washington Post article. They are looking and keeping the pulse on supporters. And they found a woman whose husband was being deported. He was a Mexican living here for many years, checking in as he was supposed to. He's been rounded up and he's deported. She still supported Trump. She didn't think her husband was going to go, but he's really trying. And people who lost their jobs with Carrier despite his grandiose promises, mm-hmm. that he was saving jobs and he only saved a fraction of them at a huge cost, are not looking at what I just said. They're looking at, well, he's trying. And he's getting much more credit for the effort he's making than I certainly am willing to give him, and then most liberals are.
And there's been a number of stories of late that the reason he won was not because of jobs and not because of saber rattling, but because of race, and using racism as he did throughout the campaign.
And he isn't black, so
right.
That's good.
Well, that's exactly it. Wow. That he's a white man, and these people voted based on their fear of no longer being in the majority. And they wanted one more time of having a president that looks like them.
Yeah, that could be. Could be. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I got to think that here's the way this election went. Trump turned that 40% out. He turned them out. They came out. They voted mm-hmm. for him. The other side did not. Those folks who did not are now alarmed and energized in a way I have never seen in my 75 years. I have never seen anything yes. like this. Well, Vietnam was pretty good. But this is.
Greater.
And I do think that with their 40% or their 35% of true believers, it won't be nearly enough because of the activation of those people who did not and learned the hard way as to what would happen.
It'll come out in the 2018 midterms. We'll have to see.
Well, it'll come out in the 2018 midterms, but if there's anything I've learned, 25% of the electorate, of the eligible electorate, voted for Trump, mm-hmm. 26% voted for Clinton, and 50% didn't come and vote.
That's right.
So whoever can harness that 50%, 1% of that 50%
right.
will be a wave election in 2018. But if there's anything I've seen, let me tell you, on the progressive liberal side of it, there is still a massive split, and the Bernie Sanders supporters mm-hmm. wanting to remake the Democratic Party into a completely independent image and to excoriate and burn Hillary Clinton to the ground, who
yep.
got 3 million more votes than any president in the United States other than Obama, even though she lost the Electoral College. That's just setting your house on fire because you don't like the carpet that was installed.
Yeah. I think that was part of the Russian plan also.
Absolutely.
They totally targeted Bernie supporters, and I have a well-known impatience with everyone who writes and calls in here saying, oh, you're just a Hillary supporter and Bernie would have won. Baloney.
Well, look, Bernie's out there stumping for a non-pro-choice
right.
Democrat right now.
Right.
And he's saying, well, you know, it's more important to get the Democrats in. Well, they're Did we forget about the Women's March?
Mm-hmm.
Did we forget how many women came out and
yes.
how angry women are about the situation we're in?
Yes, you forgot about them because there is no, there's no Tea Party patriots. There's no Americans for Prosperity group sewing together all of this disparate progressive energy into a national movement. Mm-hmm. And so what you have is the Women's Marchers March, and forget it, March for Science happened. I didn't know about it until the day before. And so, you know, so long as this keeps going on and you stay divided, you're going to get your Le Pens, you're going to get your, you know, Geert Wilders like in the Netherlands, and you're going to get Donald Trump's. And the 2018 election won't mean anything. Get together.
Were you going to say something?
No. No, I think I've had my say on this.
Me too.
Okay.
Okay, I'm here we go. Letters.
I'm good despairing morning. Today. Sorry.
Good, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Science March in Poughkeepsie. I attended the local march and videotaped about 98% of our marches, and thus can verify the numbers, which I believe were over 1,000 easily. Surprisingly, there were very few political anti-Trump signs. Most were stressing the value of science from many perspectives. And
look,
that's from Pete.
Look, here's the thing. If you say there were 3,000 people in support, okay, if you say there were 5,000 people in support, those 2,000 people difference is not going to sway any mind. It doesn't make any difference. You need some optics. So I've said you have to have at least 1,000 people if you're going to have a march in the state capitol. For the tax march on the 15th, there were only 300 or 400, I think. Mm. And it looked skimpy.
Yeah.
And there's no way around it. Speakers get up and say, oh, thanks for this great turnout. And everyone knows you're lying. So this is like this is you, Libby, that's the logistics of protest. You have to do it right.
You have to do it right. And, you know, the West Capitol Park is a lovely space. But it's big.
It's freaking huge.
It's big. They need to do it on the other side of the Capitol, which is a smaller space, but they also have the steps there. So it's like you want to have a smaller space with lots of people. And it's hard to do that when you're trying to organize lots of people. You don't want to cut your nose to spite your face. It's a real balancing act.
Right. And we do have an opposition led by the president and his Twitter machine, mm-hmm. saying, oh, it's a small group, all organized and getting paid. Right. By the way, I'm waiting for my check, Mr. Soros. I've been to two marches now. And that's what you have to do. Is mm-hmm. It's public relations.
Logistics and optics.
Yes, yeah. It's not an easy balancing act. And unless you have thousands upon thousands, the women's march here was an amazing amount of people,
and that's what you have to do. Libby,
that's what you
Saturday,
have to do
rather,
with the science march.
Tax people, not science.
All right, we got a couple of letters, and then I got to get Libby out of here on time.
Okay, Nurse Carol wrote in and said, "Here's the problem as I see it. Very simply, North Korea now faces an American president that is as crazy as their own leader." That's from
something to be
well,
said there.
If Dennis Rodman becomes U.S. ambassador,
yeah, maybe we should
to North
do that.
Korea or South Korea. There might be some hope.
Yeah.
Dorothy wants to talk about adult-based education, teacher and students too tired to be activists. As an adult basic education ABE instructor, helping wonderful non-traditional students achieve their high school equivalency certificates and transition into community college, I meet a lot of people who struggle with basic writing, use of access technology, and enough stability to make it to class faithfully. They are simply too busy surviving to think about how the government is affecting their lives personally. Trump and the future of ABE, yikes. Proud to teach, Dorothy.
That last comment is correct. They're too busy to pay about it. And that's the 50% of the eligible electorates that do not come out and vote, because we do not make it on either party's side, all right? They don't make it about them. And if people knew that 80% of the people that voted for the president were about to lose their health care, all right,
you make some time for it. We make time for exercise. Why don't we make some time for exercising our rights as citizens?
Sorry.
It's not a gift. It's something you have to work for.
Sorry, yeah, but when pure lethargy. That's what it is.
Well, and we stopped teaching civics in schools 30 years ago. And so people don't know
what their obligations
are. What the deal is.
You know, you got to make it like Mardi Gras, where everybody wants to follow the parade float. When I was a kid in Philadelphia, that was a big thing, you know.
That was the mummers.
Mardi Gras or
that wasn't a mummers
break.
No, I'm talking about voting. They would have the big trucks come out with the microphones.
Oh, yeah,
it became a community event. They would have hot dogs and everything for free. And the community.
We need
the only
to turn it
well.
Into a Pokemon game where you run around and you're going to vote. You're going to find the candidate you want. Click on it on your little.
The Republicans are going to let that happen.
Millennials will be voting left and right. Net neutrality will go right out the window.
Hello, panel. There's a wonderful documentary about a Sephardic Greek survivor family called Trezoros, the Lost Jews of Castoria. Just a reminder, there are survivors from areas other than Poland and Germany.
Uh-huh.
We were in Greece not that long ago, a couple of years ago, and we saw where they rounded up 50,000 Jews and executed them.
Oh.
Yeah, absolutely true. I
think we're out of time, but go ahead. Is that a short one?
Yeah, it was very short, but also redundant. It said John Huntsman was nominated to be the
I took care of that.
Alan, Rosemary, Libby, thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Joe.
Malcolm Nance, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program.
My pleasure, guys.
You'll be back soon the next time you're in town. Thank you very much. Great to have you here. We'll be back with more Roundtable right after this.